think about LA in particular, and Atlanta, and okay. even New York, huge industries of this career that doesn't have some sort of guideline. Most artists don't want to be regulated, because at the end of the day, I don't know if I'd want to have someone telling me certain things, right? That's what makes freelancing unique. But when it comes to COVID, we're all seeking a little bit of black and white.
That's a really good point, because I think that, you know, in Georgia, we're one of the most liberal in terms of reopening.
Sure.
We are like one of the first. But I think as artists, we just want to be having as much integrity as possible and following the highest standard. Really do your research across the country, across the board, not just, you know, locally. Welcome to
The Beauty Boss Confidential.
My name is Ren, and I'm a beauty blogger, new mom, makeup artist, and owner of my own makeup academy in Atlanta, Georgia.
My name is Nalani, and I'm a cosmetic tattoo artist and instructor. I run a busy permanent makeup studio and academy in Atlanta as well, and also manage a small team.
We're two modern women
trying to juggle it all,
from building our empire
to being a wife
and navigating being a new mom,
all while making time for ourselves.
We're here to share with you the behind the scenes
of what it's really like to run a successful beauty business,
from marketing to business strategies
and trying to find that perfect work-life balance.
Let's dive right in. Hey guys, it's Ren with another episode of Beauty Boss Confidential. I am so excited about this episode. We actually have our very first guest on. Nalani's taking a little break, so I decided to invite my new friend, Christy Tagatak from Create Safely. I have been so motivated and like on a supercharged like mission to redo my kit, get my career back on track, thanks to this lady and her team and her amazing Instagram and network of artists. So I just wanted to introduce her, and I will start by letting you, Christy, tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, tell us what you do, how you got started, and we'll go from there.
Well, first off, thank you so much for having me. I'm super, super honored. And this will be actually my first podcast. So you're popping my podcast cherry. But thank you so much for all. I just have to thank you really quick for all your kind words. And I think it's just, you're a true testament of what the goal was for this platform, which I'll go into, I'm sure, in the questions you have for me. But just a little snippet about myself. I am a working professional like yourself in makeup. I am a licensed cosmetologist and I am a beauty educator. And I currently have a salon at a Salon Republic. It's the studio salons that I'm sure you're familiar with. So they're like little micro salons. So I am a salon owner on top of everything else. And I'm signed with an agent and I do production work. Red carpet is usually what I'm doing the most, editorial campaigns. And then of course, bridal, is a huge business for a lot of us in our industry, is kind of where I filter in on the days that I don't have off. As you can tell, we probably share, we're both really, really busy. But that's kind of a nutshell of what I did pre-COVID and what I'm jumping back into. But as of recent, and again, a little bit of the education background is in the last 6 years, I kind of shifted my career. About 6 years ago, prior to that, I was working with MAC Cosmetics for about 16 years, and I was deep into my career there, working as a makeup artist, and I was a regional manager at one point for about close to 5 years in the Los Angeles area. And so a lot of the training and the business background came from that, but I always had a passion for hair. And I came from two grandmothers that did hair for a living, and they were both immigrants from the Philippines, both widowed. They both lost their husbands during the war, and they moved to the U.S. to have a better life. And I always grew up around hair, and so it was just kind of this natural progression into doing beauty. So anyhow, I decided finally to shift and pivot my career into hair and left MAC. It was a definitely hard decision because I loved working in that environment and that industry, and went to cosmetology school, finished in like 10 months, and then was offered a really great opportunity to create makeup curriculum specifically for cosmetology schools. So that's what I started doing as a creative director, and I had to work with different states and their state board, and infection control was a huge part of that, and creating best practices. And of course, pre-COVID, infection control was a big deal, but it wasn't to the level it is now. So with everybody like myself, and we can all relate, just the grieving part of losing the loss of your job and the thing that you love, it was really hard for me to kind of figure out. And I think some of us are still there. Like, what are we going to do? Like, how are we going to pivot? And do I change my career altogether? I'm sure you experienced this too. But I was probably like 3 weeks into the closure of the quarantine. I got reached out from one of the Paul Mitchell schools, and they asked me to start doing Zoom classes, and they said, pick your topic. And I said, I'm going to teach editorial makeup, so the creative side, but also teach infection control and building your kit. And that's how I kind of got out of my grief and finally opened my kit, and then just started communicating with people amongst the industry and within my network. And I just realized that there's going to be a huge need, especially now, for the community to come together, because I saw a lot of information, which I'm sure you saw, where there was misinformation, just because people didn't know. It was people probably trying to deliver information to support our community, but there just wasn't enough research that some of these people in our industry were doing before they gave it out. And then you dealt with, companies that were creating fear. And I'm not sure if that was the intention at the beginning, but it happened, right? And we all probably bought stuff that were probably like, did we really need that? It was helping artists in LA. We're a very big community, but still tight. And I was doing social distancing shops with artists, whether they were in the union or freelancers or agency signed. I was doing them already prior to Create Safely. And that's when I was like, you know what? I need, like, people need help. And I come from a background. It's part of my culture I've just been always instilled to help people and help without, receiving anything. So, that's just part of the culture that I come from. And it worked perfectly because it was part of my passion of makeup and hair. And so the two meshed well. And I was like, you know what? Let's do this. It all tied in together. And then Create Safely was born. And I think through what I had built already and just people reaching out, and it just, word kind of just spreads, right? And I think what's so great about Instagram is it's a great platform to reach out to people all over the world. And I just kind of went, I guess people would say viral a little bit, but for me, I'm just not someone that likes a lot of attention. So I was like, is it really going viral? Because I just saw it as a way of helping people, and I think everyone really needed that, and they still need that right now. You know what I mean? Just that support.
Definitely. Wow. I have so many questions, and I didn't realize that you had such a well-rounded career. Like, you're doing what I think a lot of people aspire to be. And it's not just like a simple like artist, but you're like, you have developed a professional career in beauty with education, artistry, product development, brand presence. So that's so amazing. You're welcome. And I really love the fact that you're so willing to help. And, I definitely always reiterate to people, like, there's room for everybody, and we're better as a whole than individually. Absolutely. And I want to ask you, like, So you've been pretty much like doing this for a long time. So you are the right person to go to. Like, you're like the sanitation queen. You know what I mean?
Oh, thank
So
you. That was kind of, I think we all go through a moment of like that imposter syndrome where we're kind of like, I don't know, is the information I'm sharing, like, is it right? You know, you kind of question yourself because it is, it's one of those things where, you don't know who, I mean, you didn't know me prior. You knew you were sold on the message and the information, right? That's on the platform. And it resonated. And I'm sure you did your own personal research and it was aligned, right? Because I think to some degree, everyone has done their research. And I think what Create Safely did was it validated, okay, you know what? Things do have to be elevated. We have to raise the bar. And here is someone that's experienced that is sharing this. But there were times where I was like, I don't know, like, am I giving the right information? You kind of question yourself a little bit. I don't know if you've done that before.
I mean, sometimes you just have to go with it, though. You have to put yourself out there. Right. Just do it, right?
But I knew, though, in my heart, I think I knew that I was giving out the right information. And to your point, because it's the experience, you know, it's the background that I have that gave me the ability to create a platform like this. Because I don't think if I had the writing and creating makeup curriculum, a cosmetology license, and then all actually working with different states, because every state has a different state board. And the reason why I always bring in state board is because, as we know, the makeup industry as a whole is not regulated. We don't have anything that's mandating us. And there is no standard, right? And so that's where I always rely on the union and the state board, because the union is regulated too by, and it works in conjunction with the state board of each state. So we as freelancers, and I say that because I'm not part of the union, but I am a licensed Cosmo, we're going to seek to that foundation as kind of our base, right? And then if we kind of connect and we're aligned with that, then we're headed in the right direction, because the state board is governed by our governing bodies, which for me, it's Governor Newsom and then Garcetti in LA. So I know that that's going to put me in the right direction. But then obviously, because makeup is not even recognized, if you notice, through my research with California, the interesting thing is you won't see a guidance for a makeup artist. We fall in the category of tattoo artists. So like an esthetician is going to get recognized. Body art, actually, we fall into the category of body art. So we're not even, as makeup artists, part of hair salons. And which is really, it's interesting, right? When you think about LA in particular and Atlanta, okay, where, and even New York, I mean, there's huge, you know, industries of this career that doesn't have some sort of guideline, you know? It's really interesting, right? But at the same time too, it's kind of like, you know, Ren, it's like, most artists don't want to be regulated, because at the end of the day, I don't know if I'd want to have someone telling me certain things, right? That's what makes freelancing unique. But when it comes to COVID, we're all seeking a little bit of black and white. You know what I mean?
That's a really good point, because I think that, you know, in Georgia, we're one of the most liberal in terms of reopening.
Sure.
We are like one of the first. It's really crazy. Like, I remember I had to look up pretty much salons and barbering code in order to like follow that protocol, which had nothing to do with makeup. But I think as artists, we just want to be having as much integrity as possible. And whoever standard, like you put, like the union, the state board, just following the highest standard out there and ensure our safety. So I think that's a really good point, that you really do your research across the country, across the board, not just, you know, locally.
One last thing, and then I know you've got other questions, because I could talk about this all day. I'm like, love this stuff. But in my experience, because again, I had to create best practices specifically for makeup, not hair, for different states. And there's actually states out there that You can't even use brushes. It's not part of the state board. You have to only use single-use disposables. And I'm like, how do people, you know, when you think about it, because we our tools are everything, right? How does one learn makeup without brushes? And these schools actually do not provide. I mean, they're using the dough, you know, the sponge tip applicators. They can't use their hands. So it's like these schools are probably in a better position because these states, because they've been working pre, you know, COVID for a while, you know.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I mean, I knew there were some antiquated methods out there from like the teachings, but now
Yeah.
it makes sense
Yeah,
because if they're regulated to do that.
and then you're right.
Wow, those bunch of
I know, isn't
applicators,
that
wow.
crazy? And the other thing too, what I found out, so because UVC light's a huge topic. And I don't know if that's a question for you, but real quick on the topic of state board, there are some states that actually recognize UVC light. However, it's not, I haven't seen through my research of UVC light using being approved or like having to be regulated for makeup. I've only seen it in the nail industry and esthetician. I haven't seen it in terms of like makeup brushes per se.
It's just like a gray area that, no one has really like done extra
Right.
studies on. So we're hopefully there'll be more science and
Right.
data, in the future. So we just have to do the best we can. And I think, you're really helping the industry move forward. So like you really are like groundbreaking, and I think that the industry needed people like you. So
Wow.
congratulations
Thank you
for
so
sure.
much, Ron. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, there, I mean, I'm a total nerd too when it comes to all the stuff. And like pre-COVID, I was very passionate about it. But I noticed that, like in Atlanta, especially, there are a lot of self-taught makeup artists, which is completely fine. But how do you deal with people who are rejecting all these extra measures? Did you ever come across that prior to COVID and then after COVID, like this great
Oh, yes.
transition? Like, what do you say to
No, that's a
people?
great question. So, as we know, I mean, pre-COVID as a freelancer, so before I even became a licensed cosmetologist, because again, I've only had a license it for probably going on 6 years now. So, before that, I was just a freelancer. So, here's the thing, a lot of my best practices came from MAC. Because MAC back in I think when I started at MAC, it was 99. They really were setting the tone for best practices in terms of makeup. We were using 70% alcohol and things like that. But at MAC, I mean, I've seen some crazy things there too. Not, I mean, aside from that, just makeup counters, not even MAC, I think just cosmetic counters in general. You're always going to have, to your point, there's going to be artists that cut corners, you know, and even licensed professionals. I've experienced assisting, and working alongside licensed professionals that actually have licenses and have gone to school with extra hours with infection control that aren't practicing with best practices. And I think to answer that question, it's really, I've seen a lot of it. My take on it is that every single person is going to have a different opinion about what COVID looks like and how it affects their profession. It's really interesting because when you start working, and I'm sure you've started working, and I'm not sure if you ran into this, but every client's going to be different because their take and their opinion, it's kind of like politics, right? It's everyone has their own take on what this pandemic has and how it's affected them, whether they believe it or not. Or if somebody lost someone in their life because like to COVID, is going to have a different opinion on how they're going to make changes in their kit and the things that they're going to, you know, the measures that they're going to take. But I think for me personally, what I've been doing to help support these people that maybe aren't bought into it, or just maybe aren't at that level, or maybe they're not exposed to it too. Because those are the things too, is like maybe people aren't exposed to other people that are changing or elevating their kit or raising their standards. But my goal at Create Safely and what I've always done throughout my entire career, Ren, is I I focus on what needs to change and showcase the things that are best practices, that are great examples. So I believe the more that you highlight somebody's strengths, so say if you're managing someone, and I always go back to management because that's my background, if you highlight the strengths and you highlight what needs to be done and what changes need to be made, it's normalizing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, focusing on the good changes.
Exactly. So if I could have taken another approach and been like a lot, there's other, platforms where they say, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that. But that's not the way that I've taught. That's not where I've seen success in changes throughout my career, which you already know my background. Where I've seen the most positive results is in leading with love and leading with love with what you're showing. And that's what I believe is happening in Create Safely is the community is really big. They're compassionate in their sharing. I'm part of that community too, as I look and I see if something is crazy, I'm going to be very honest. I'm not going to share it if it's not aligned because, and I haven't seen anything crazy so far, but here's the thing. I'm not the standard, right? And we don't know what the standard is. And that's what makes this so amazing is we're all navigating it together, but we're starting to see, like at least I'm starting to see different shifts in people's kits, because now that you start working, everyone's changing things. And then as studies change to your point, like you were saying earlier, science is starting to change the way that we're doing things too. So everything is always evolving. I hope I'm answering your question.
Yeah, no, that's really good. I mean, I was going to add on the Create Safely Instagram page. The community is so amazing. Like, I feel like there's no cattiness that you kind of hear as like a typical thing in like the beauty industry. Everybody's wanting to learn, supporting each other, giving kudos, and like, you do a really great job of being super engaged on that channel. Like I check the stories every single day because I like love it. So like speaking of Create Safely, so you started with, the kit modifications and like showcasing your new practices. So where did the pocketbook come from? Have you been sitting on this for a while or was it something that came with COVID or tell everybody what it is?
Going back, leaving when I left MAC and going into cosmetology school, I've always wanted to create some sort of tool and like I say, a kit to assist artists, whether it's makeup artists, hairstylists, nail tech, esthetician, anything that could help somebody work more effectively and kind of cut out time. Infection control back then wasn't really like at the forefront, right? We just knew that hygiene is important to be clean, but I never thought of that as like being the main reason as to creating a product. It was always just more like efficiency, right? So I did actually, and now I'm excited because I, now that this has kind of come into play, is to your question, sorry, this is a kind of a long way of going around it, but I've always wanted to create something. Now, the pocketbook came in to play through best practices and through all my research and all the experience that I've had. I was like, you know what? I need to create something that's not only efficient, but is also something that will help people work more safely and help lower risk. And that's when the pocketbook came. It came through, the creation came through the pandemic. So it's a very new creation. And it was something that I was doing through my practices. I mean, you've seen all the videos. Everything that I've shown is everything I'm practicing. And it's stuff that's came from my curriculum that I've created pre-COVID and now has been tweaked a little bit to cater because it hasn't changed too much because a lot of the state board stuff with non-porous and things like that has always been in place for us, like at a state board level in the salon. Now it's just taking those elements into makeup artistry, specifically freelance, and taking the salon environment into the mobile environment, right? So I'm trying to figure out a way to add a kit because we needed something, because most of the cases out there are porous, right? A lot of those really cool, like, cases we have that have the elastic where you put the pencils in, and right now we all know, and I have to just say this really quickly, is that CDC has said that the chances of people catching corona or COVID 19 from a surface, whether it's non-porous or porous, there aren't any cases. So it's highly unlikely, which is a good sigh of relief, right? But on the flip side, CDC says, if it's porous over time, if it's a high touch or a highly used product or item or what have you, a makeup case that you're using constantly, you're constantly touching and touching, porous is going to be hard to clean over time and disinfect. If you can't throw it in the wash and or wash it properly with soap and water and a brush or what have you. So the pocketbook was just created through my own practices working here. And I originally wanted to, because I was already in the works of me doing it directly from Create Safely. But again, part of my personality and my core is to give this idea and this creation out to the community now. If they could create it on their own, let's share it. Because I'm all about sharing. And I knew that once I launched mine directly, everyone's going to need it, whether they get it from Create Safely directly, who created it, or if they could create it on their own.
Yeah, and I tried to get it a couple of times. I want that clear one, but it's always sold out.
Yeah, I know. So I got it. It's going to be launching, hopefully. And this is, again, it's like another, I'm completely like, pivoted my career, not in terms of being a business owner with retail. I mean, this is something that I'm totally, it's new to me. I mean, and everyone's like, how do you do it, Christy? Like, what? Because I'm running Create Safely. And I tell you, like, let me just give you a day in a life of my world with Create Safely, because I am someone that will give my time at any point of the day. And I get probably, I want to say at least 50 DMs a day. And I respond to every single one of them. And whether it's through texting, I'm a big audio message. So I'm talking to people. I'm connecting people, because I can't tell you, like, people will be like, oh my God, I love what Ren posted. Can you tell me what that is? And I'll be like, oh my, why don't you just message her directly? And because that's the thing that I love the most too, is like bringing people together. And I always tell people when they share something, I'll message them and I'm like, thank you so much for sharing. And I'm like, get ready, because people are probably going to reach out to you, you know? And that's what is so amazing about what's happening right now. But the pocketbook is something that just I knew was going to be, because for me personally, it was amazing. Because the whole idea of the pocketbook is something that you can grab and go, something that you can look at and see all your products, see what you need to get and grab it easily. And that's the other thing too, is part of the education behind the pocketbook, because there is education behind it for best practices, is you really want to try to consider not filling it completely, because it defeats the purpose of what this kit is supposed to provide for you, which is efficiency. And efficiency supports best practices, which supports lowering risks, right? Because the less we can touch, in theory, the less cross-contamination is going to be happening, right? So if we can grab and grab what we need out of each pocket easier, then the less chances are of exposing things, you know? So that's kind of the idea, but that's where the name came from. And then I changed the spelling because I loved KIT. I was like, oh, it's perfect, like K-I-T. And before I launched, I know, before I launched everything, I mean, everything is in trademark. So I knew that already, like going in, like I already know that this is, you know, I felt confident that this community is not going to take from me, you know, and I knew that they would support me 100%. And they have. I mean, you guys have been so supportive of this little creation I've made. And like I said, where they get it, if they get it from me, great. But it's been an amazing, amazing journey so far.
Yeah, and I just want to tell the audience, in case you don't know what the pocketbook is, it's like it's really a novel idea. I don't think I've ever seen like a kind of kit train case, makeup case like it, but it's like a flexible, you know, non-porous, small take-and-go kind of binder with envelopes that you can seal off your micro kits, and so it's not exposed to right. the virus. And it's genius. Like, I haven't seen anything like it out there. And it's like an organized person's dream come true, you know? But I think like once you get into makeup and you've been in it for so long, those are the things that appeal to you. Like, you have enough makeup and hair stuff, but then you start seeing those amazing, like, space-saving organizing sure. tools. And it's like, yes, this
is
amazing.
Well, I think what's cool about it is like what the idea too behind it is, it's for everybody. It's for every industry and it's for the everyday person. You know, if you want something, like I personally carry one in my purse when I do carry a purse, which I normally carry a laundry bag, like a really cute, like mesh laundry bag that I just carry as my purse now. And I throw my pocketbook in there. It has my wallet. I can tuck my phone in there.
So you can just throw it on the wash, the laundry bag?
Now. I mean, I would love the day that I can carry my Louis Vuitton bag again, but I just am being extra cautious. And so I got some Daiso from Daiso, like a cute camo. I'm actually going to post it soon. I've got to work on content. I'm a little behind because of the pocketbook. But yeah, I carry my pocketbook in my mesh bag purse, and all my bags that I carry any of my kit stuff in, I launder, which is perfect. So I just like throw them in the wash with anything else, my capes that need to get laundered. And then I take it out, and then it's my purse for when I go out. And then I throw my pocketbook in there.
Such a good
tip. Yeah. So you can, most of us aren't carrying too much these days when we leave the house. But why not, if you want to, carry it in a pocketbook?
I mean, I can see a lot of people using it for like educational tools, just people use it for like their PPE. And that makes sense. A lot of people could use it for that. But yeah, that's such a great idea. So I don't know if you saw any of the cover work for the podcast, but me and Nalani are both Asian beauty professionals. And I think we wanted to start this platform because, you know, we wanted to kind of give a voice to the Asian beauty community, because I don't think there's a ton of support there. So I wanted to hear, because me and you are both Filipino, I wanted to hear about like, how was it for you? Like, how was it growing up? And then luckily you had supportive grandmas who are in the industry, but what's it been like working as like an Asian beauty professional? Did you have to overcome any obstacles? Do you find like it's a help, or have you had any hindrances along the way? I'm just curious.
No, I think it's a great question. And I actually get asked that a lot too, especially because now I think more than ever, mm-hmm. I think with Black Lives Matters and things like that, it's I've gotten a lot of questions about that because we're women of color. You know, and for me, I grew up in Santa Barbara. And Santa Barbara, are you familiar with Santa Barbara?
Yeah, I was born in California.
Okay, so
too,
you know, Santa Barbara, it's because, you know, it's definitely more of a, at the time growing up, I think now it's more diverse. But I was probably one of like, maybe, I want to say 10 Filipino families back in the 80s, like, and our community was really tight. And so I bring this up just because although I grew up in a community that was predominantly more Caucasian and Hispanic in Santa Barbara, the Filipino community was really tight. We had a Filipino community center, and I was raised with a lot of the Filipino culture, even though I was born here. Both my parents and my grandparents are all immigrants from the Philippines. So I'm first generation American here out of the family. And so their idea, again, I come from two women that are like entrepreneurs, and they had to be because that's how they were, they're survivors, I like to say. And they both came in to the country in hospitality, so in caring for people. So I just automatically was kind of born into that. So in the beginning, they weren't, both my grandparents were like, you need to go to school and you need to get an education and you need to do this. You need to be a doctor, a nurse. It was a nurse. They all wanted to be a nurse. And, you know, stereotypically, a lot of Filipinos are nurses, right? All of my aunts are nurses. My mom actually was a nurse in the Philippines. And when she came here, she couldn't pass the test. So then she actually took, this is a whole nother story, but she was my late mother, because she passed away now, but she actually opened up a restaurant in Santa Barbara.
Wow.
I think because my mom took a different path, because she didn't end up being a nurse, she ended up being a professional golfer and a business owner, restaurant business owner. My family was very like receptive for me now, like to not pursue the traditional, like being a mechanical engineer or a nurse. Anyhow, that was kind of like my experience culturally, is my grandmother didn't want me to leave the house. Like, cause when I worked for Mac, I had opportunities to get promotions out of back in LA and not in Santa Barbara. And she was like, you really need to be here to help with your mom. And so it was a lot of like, you need to stay local to take care of the family. And I was happy to do it, because that's just, it's part of my nature, you know, is to help. So I kind of let my career with makeup slow down a little bit because of that. But then when I got into my career, I did notice at the time, like, there weren't a lot of Asian people that were makeup artists. And this was back in probably, I want to say like early 2000s and like late 90s. Now, obviously, there's, I think, a lot more of Asians in this industry. But I just noticed that there just weren't a lot. And I don't know if it's because Asians weren't pursuing, you know, working maybe at a retail counter, because culturally we had to go to school, or I don't really know, but it's definitely something interesting. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I have a nurse mom, and my parents were really fighting super hardcore for me to do that route. And I'm first generation too, and they didn't want me to leave. Like, I was raised in Florida with them. But I think that, you know, somebody has to break the way sometimes to give new opportunities. And I think now a lot more people are seeing Asians doing the beauty roles because of like social media and YouTube, and luckily. Yeah. But, you know, thank goodness for, I think, just moving forward with diversity. Like, yeah, that's really why I got into doing makeup professionally, because no one knew how to do my makeup at the counter. So it was just like a necessary thing for me to learn on my own. And that kind of spread to me doing makeup on other people too, because no one knew how to do Asian makeup, at least when I was growing up in like a primarily Caucasian area.
It's really interesting too, because when I worked in Santa Barbara, and again, remember, there weren't a lot of Asian people in Santa Barbara. I was the only, at the time, I was the only person of color. And I can't tell you, I became like, I was a pace setter. Every single person of color was coming to me for help. And every single Asian was coming to me for help, because they felt like I could relate to them. Which is interesting, right? You know, because obviously that's just perception. I think people believe that if you look like me, then you know best for me, right? I mean, and which I think can work the other way around too, you know, with people that are maybe African-American. They may connect and feel like an artist that is African-American can do that, which most of the time, which I think now is so great, is that there's a huge focus on, as makeup artists, being able to work with every tone of color, you know, and every ethnicity. because that's something too that I was really, really proud of, like as a makeup artist, is being able to work with every skin tone. And to me, like every skin tone is it's color, right? When you're matching foundation. But I did experience the same thing in terms of like, I want you to help me because you are Asian and I'm Asian and you know how to do Asian makeup, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's everyone's responsibility to make people feel comfortable in their chair, no matter like what they look like, and, exactly. You know, educate themselves. And I that's been a huge topic with the Black Lives Matter movement amongst makeup artists and hairstylists in the industry, is being able to do everybody and making it okay to put people of color at the forefront who aren't necessarily in those leadership roles, you know?
Yeah. I remember working on jobs, not to name anything in particular, where I was the only like woman of color. And I say woman of color because a lot of production too at the time is a lot of men, right? too. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, there are moments where you feel like as an Asian or a person of color, like you feel intimidated sometimes. I would feel like, you know, like, oh, I don't know if I fit in. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like, mm-hmm. am I going to connect? Like, do you know? And it's a real feeling.
Yeah. And I think that's why there is such a big push to see what beauty companies, who they're employing and what the diversity factor is, because I feel like you should, you know, it helps to have a diverse workforce and it makes people feel comfortable. And we can learn from each other's experiences. Yeah, I definitely grew up in the same situation and went from like a Caucasian primarily like education to moving to Atlanta. And usually I'm still the only Asian person in a room of minorities, you know? So yeah. I had to kind of adapt both ways. But I think that, you know, not being afraid to just have dialogue and, you know, show that it's cool. It's okay. We all get along.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I think we are. It's a very, and right now with COVID too, I think that it's really brought in a lot of things for people, and this is a totally positive thing, that are really important to us, you know, and being proud of our heritage. And I think it's really important too that companies are taking responsibility and changing and shifting things, you know, so that there is more diversity.
In general, like what kind of advice do you want to give to all the people on this podcast who, you know, who are building their beauty boss careers or, you know, currently like managing their own businesses? Because, you know, you've come from, you know, such a diverse career as a beauty artist. And that's just how I wanted to kind of wrap up the call.
As long as we can just take away the three takeaways, I think, in terms of getting your kit ready. And this is going back to my three-step technique from Create Safely, is getting the knowledge, doing the research, just find out as much as you can about what disinfecting is, what cleaning is, what that means, what is non-porous, what is porous. And get a good understanding of that. What is your state regulations, things like that. If you can just find the foundation of your knowledge, that's going to help you feel more confident in now going into your second technique of practice. And that practice is just putting into action, getting your kit ready. So now that you know all this, you can now it'll help you navigate how to change your kit, you know, adding the bags and actually practice your working setup, you know, practice what that's going to look like for a bridal job or on set. And that way you can work out and change things that you need to change. So that way when you do get booked on work, you're somewhat prepared. And then thirdly, you know, the last step is committing. You know, commit to your one and two. Because it's not going to mean anything if you don't commit to it. And I think ultimately, if you can just focus on those three steps, it'll help you not feel so overwhelmed. That's definitely what's helped me. And that's what you're seeing, whether you know it or not. I'm taking you through those three-step techniques, which is helping you and helping the community and not feel so overwhelmed, you know? And I think in terms of getting out there and getting working, like, don't be so hard on yourself if you make mistakes, and try not to overthink things. And that's going to be normal. And just be prepared to have some self-care and make time for yourself once you do start working, because it is very tiring. I'm sure you've probably experienced wearing the masks and the PPE. It makes days like more overwhelming. And then lastly, sorry, this is supposed to be one thing. You will find your creativity again, because I think that is what is so hard about COVID now in the new normal, is we as artists connect with people, and that's what we love. We love the personal connection, and it's so hard to do that with a mask on, you know, but it's going to come back, and you're going to do and make the changes at your own pace, and that's fine. And try not to let any negativity or things affect your decisions on what you want to do with your kit. Because at the end of the day, as long as you do your own research and you find things that you're aligned with, that's going to be the most important thing. And try not to, you know, try to kind of silence the commotion that's happening around you, if that makes sense.
Wow, you said that really well. I mean, I think if it comes down to doing the research and doing what makes you have the integrity, that's, you know, that's all that you can do right now. And I think that's a good job.
Thank you. And just everything's changing. And that's the thing. Like, all we can do is raise the standard. We don't have a standard right now. The standard is that we have to change. You know, we have to change our best practices and just be more mindful of lowering risks, you know?
Yeah, I think we all have a responsibility, and it's something that we should take seriously. And I appreciate you giving us, you know, some groundwork and tips and a framework to go by, because a lot of us, like you were saying, you know, we don't have the knowledge, or we just weren't exposed to it. But this is why, you know, we do these things and we share, because it helps everybody.
Yeah. And I think I'm glad that you ended with that. I think that just continue. And I always tell everyone, like, whether you do it on Create Safely or you do it within your network or with your family, just talk about it and work through your process and your days that you're having. Like, talk about it and support each other and just continue to lead with love. My grandma always said, and my mom, like, as long as you lead with love, you're headed in the right direction.
Oh, I love that. That's beautiful. Well, so I'm going to wrap it up now. And thank you so much. Tell everybody where they can find you and find more about Create Safely and Pocketbook.
Okay, so you can please follow me at Create Safely. It's CREATESAFELY. And then Pocketbook, you guys know the spelling, just in case, POKIT and BOOK. You can find it on the link tree directly to sign up. And everything right now is basically private access to the Pocketbook shop. So just make sure you sign up for updates. But we should have everything ready to go for pre-order in the next couple weeks.
Yay. Okay. I'm following the list. So I'm so excited. Well, thank you again, Christy. So I'm just going to wrap it up. Hopefully everybody learned a lot, enjoyed it, and got some peace from this conversation. So until next time, we will see you on the next podcast. Stay cute and confident. Hey guys, it's Ren again. I hope you're enjoying today's episode. I want to let you guys know, if you're really interested in becoming a great makeup artist and building your business, definitely check out my Industry Makeup Academy online course at www.onlineima.com. There's a whole section on entrepreneurship, of course, as well as technique and everything you need to be a great makeup artist. So definitely check it out, onlineima.com. Thanks for joining us on the Beauty Boss Confidential.
If you love this episode, go ahead and screen record your favorite part and tag us on Instagram. I'm Nalani at BeautyBot.
And I'm Ren at Makeup by RenRen.
We would love to hear from you.
Don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you'll never miss an episode. And please give us a 5-star rating and tell all your beauty bosses.
Thanks again for tuning in.
And we'll catch you next time.